From Showboat and Porgy and Bess in the first half of the 20th century to more recent shows like Caroline or Change and Memphis, the Broadway musical has often taken up Southern themes. But our next guest says they tend to have a negative view of the South and don't reflect its racial diversity today. Gary Richards is a professor of English at the University of Mary Washington and a devotee of Broadway musicals.
The vast majority, even in the 21st century, of musicals set in the South tend to freeze it. So it's always the past that is racially fraught. It is the 1960s or the 1920s, or even going back into the 19th century. What's missing is the 21st century South. That region still has racial tension, but it's different racial tensions. And that's just not being explored, I find.
When the musicals first came out, though, they were representing the fraught racial circumstances in the South.
Yes and no. On the one hand, they're identifying the South as a site of racial tension, and I don't want to minimize that. But remember, we're talking about Broadway musicals. This is not the realm of reality. So even when you have in the 1920s, Showboat looking back to the 1870s and 1880s, it still is kind of an imagined racial tension. It is one of the earliest lasting musical representations of the South. It was turned into film after film, and it's had famous people embodying these characters. Paul Robeson, for instance, beginning the opening number of Old Man River. So let's listen to a little bit, and I think you'll see just how moving kind of black toil is made by having Robeson sing.
You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and wrecked with pain. Tote at barge, lift at bale, get a little drunk and you land in jail. I get weary and sick of trying, I'm tired of living and scared of dying. But Old Man River, he just keeps rolling along.
That is one of my favorite songs of all time, sung by one of the most wonderful voices of all time.
I think it's just amazing. And what it does is establish the importance of race at the very beginning. And so the musical is going to go on to take up other issues of race. There's famously an instance of miscegenation in the musical. So in the 1920s, this was groundbreaking. Keep in mind what the typical Broadway, quote unquote, musical was at the time. It was a revue. It was lots of showgirls with legs. Suddenly you had Hammerstein taking the novel and adapting it into something that had movement and seriousness.
And so what was wrong with that? Why does this pigeonhole the South if it was helping crack open the nut of racial tension?
I think that it was not at all problematic at the time. What becomes problematic is the way it gets revived. It has become a war horse.
So your complaint is not just that these are tired and worn out, that they're perpetuating racial stereotypes of the South that...
Well, there's a little bit of that. There's also a financial element here. Producer deciding, I'm going to put X million of dollars in Showboat. That's not going towards a musical dealing with the contemporary South. What happens if we're dealing with Latino presences in the South now? That may be a more pressing racial issue than something that happened in 1880. Showboat was groundbreaking. And if we go just one decade further, we've got Porgy and Bess. It shifts the focus away from white characters dealing with racism to black characters dealing with racism.
So you're saying that Porgy and Bess was fine in its time, but that by continuing to revive the performances, it also is freeze-framing us in the South, in the
yes.
A South that doesn't exist anymore.
Right. We have this being set, you know, in the 19-teens, 1920s. That's now, you know, a century ago. What I see going on more recently is a whole spate in which the South is depicted again and again and again, always in the past. It quarantines racial problems to some other region. The South is always where they don't do race right. The South was on the wrong side of the Civil War. The South was on the wrong side of segregation and civil rights, etc. The second thing is, even if we don't quarantine race problems to the South, by setting in the past, we can pat ourselves on the back and say, oh, that was in the bad old days.
Are there some musicals that are particularly egregious?
There are some that I find pretty horrific. The musical Memphis, for instance, it ran for about 3 years on Broadway. It is about a white DJ who is infatuated with first African-American music and then a young African-American female singer, and they form an interracial liaison. There's a character who has been traumatized by having seen racial violence when he was a child, and so he has become mute. However, when he sees this problematized love affair between a black woman and a white man, and it looks like it's not going to work out, he suddenly bursts into song defending interracial love.
Say a prayer that change is coming. Say a prayer that hope is around the bend. And if you pray that change is coming, oh Jesus, then may what you pray come true. Amen.
Memphis is, I think, a fairly uncomplicated story. In contrast, in 2004, Tony Kushner, working with Jeanine Tesori, did the musical Caroline or Change. And it is about an African-American maid employed by a Jewish family and about the tensions that emerge between her children, and this Jewish family. It's set at the time of the Kennedy assassination. So, of course, civil rights is hovering, in the background. It is also about the change within Caroline. She's very traditional. It is her daughter who is an advocate of civil rights, who demands to be able to engage in protest against racism and things like that.
Among the others that you made reference to, The Color Purple and Hairspray, do you want to talk about either of those?
Sure. I think that all of those continue to play into this pattern. However, I am heartened by a handful of exceptions to this. The one that I think is perhaps most significant is The Light in the Piazza. It's about two Southern women, a mother and a daughter, who immediately after World War II are traveling abroad, and they're in Italy. It is about them struggling with their Southern culture and how it relates to international culture and European culture. So I think what's important is these are not the buffoonish white racist characters that we've seen in musical after musical. The daughter is very perplexed by all the naked statues. She's seen a lot of naked boys. And she says, in contrast, back in Winston-Salem, it's the land of corduroys, that things are covered, things are. And I think you have a very traditional Southern Protestant background.
There were princes, painters, noble men of logic and art.
Firenze,
Leonardo, Michelangelo, the start.
It's a completely naked statue.
'Twas a dawning day, unfurling, and the whole.
What it does is shift, I think, to an interrogation of whiteness, because we now have this mother and daughter thinking about how their whiteness is different from the whiteness that they're encountering in Italy, what cultural differences they are. So I think that it still is dealing with race, but it is asking us to think about race not strictly in a black-white dichotomy.
You are a Southerner yourself. What did you yourself experience that you think is missing?
I think the first time I was in Mississippi and seeing a student who was very typical in his kind of Asian embodiment open his mouth and had a Southern drawl.
Yeah.
That's what is missing. The first time I went into a classroom when I was teaching in New Orleans, and a third of my students were Vietnamese. That's what's not being represented in the South. When I see areas where the billboards are all in Spanish, you know, that's not being represented. I think there perhaps needs to be greater diversity in the depictions of race.
Well, Gary Richards, thank you for talking to me today on With Good Reason.
Thank you for having me here. It's been fun.
Gary Richards is a professor of English at the University of Mary Washington. Support for With Good Reason is provided by the Jefferson Hotel in Richmond, where accommodations, dining, and local attractions are available in an array of seasonal packages, reservations, and more information at jeffersonhotel.com. You're listening to With Good Reason, produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Elliot Majerzyk and Kelly Libby are our associate producers. Andrew Windham is our executive producer. Jeannie Palin handles listener services. Let us know what you think. Check us out on Facebook and join the discussion. Visit us at withgoodreasonradio.org or download the podcast on iTunes. For a free copy of the show on a CD, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.